This is Wikipedia Weekly, episode 121 for April 1st, 2016. How April Fools went down in Wikipedia. Welcome to another episode of Wikipedia Weekly. I'm your host, Andrew Lee, also known as User Fuzzheado on the English Wikipedia here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Emily, known as User Kailana, coming to you from beautiful Chicago.
And I'm Rob, also known as User Gamaliel on the English Wikipedia, and I'm in sunny Florida.
Welcome to another episode of Wikipedia Weekly, our first roundtable episode of 2016. Welcome to Rob, your first time on the podcast.
Thank you. I'll try not to say anything too embarrassing.
Well, this is a kind of an extension of the relationship now that Wikipedia Weekly has with the Signpost. So, Rob, tell us a little bit about yourself. You are the editor of the Signpost, and what else?
Yeah, yes, I'm wearing a lot of hats these days, probably way too many. I'm on the arbitration committee. I'm one of the editors-in-chief of the Signpost, the weekly newspaper on the English Wikipedia, though we do cover all Wikimania projects. I'm sure there's some other things that I do that I... forgetting.
You're on the board of Wikimedia DC.
Yes, I'm on the board. I've forgotten about that. Yes, I'm on the board of directors of Wikimedia District of Columbia.
Good representation from ARPCOM, Wikimedia DC, the media, our community media, all here on the podcast. So the big news today, obviously, is April 1st in Wikipedia or in the Wikimedia universe. There's a lot to kind of figure out what happened. We know the most about what happened in English Wikipedia. But tell us a little bit about what we had in the Signpost, Rob. It got a release a little bit later in the day.
We had some troubles. We're starting on a new bot, and we had some troubles with it. But it's going to be fantastic when Jason, our publication manager, gets it rolling. But he's doing a great job with that stuff. But we had a couple speed bumps today, so it got out a little bit late. But we're very proud of it. We've been laughing about it to ourselves all week. So hopefully someone else will laugh, too. We had we just had one article this year, which was about Jimmy Wales joining the presidential ticket of Donald Trump. And some of the other folks on the Signpost made some really funny-looking fake images to accompany this.
Right. And if you visit the article on the Signpost under News and Notes, you'll see this gigantic gold-colored puzzle sphere with Trump / Wales in lowercase and small type. Which would be appropriate, I guess. Trump does not want to be equal with anyone, right?
Yeah, this went through about like five different versions. Originally, it was in Comic Sans, and then we decided to try to change that into a more, more Trump-appropriate font. Someone, I forget who exactly, but suggested the gold logo, which is absolutely perfect for Trump. I didn't even know we had a bright gold logo, but there it was on Commons.
I'm not surprised we have tacky-looking variations of the puzzle sphere.
That's true.
I am unsurprised.
I don't know what I was thinking.
So this is pretty funny. The lead sentence, I'll just read the first part of it. In a surprise announcement, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has announced that Wikipedia co-founder Jimmy Wales will be his vice presidential running mate. And then you actually go into some real factual history that, in fact, Jimmy had served on the presidential campaign committee for Lawrence Lessig when he had that short run to be the Democratic nominee, right?
Yeah, the idea was so over the top, so we tried to couple it with a very factual seeming story with details from real life. And even the quotes by both of these people, we modeled them after real life things that they said.
Which with Trump, he might just say that next week.
That's true. You never know with him. And then there's also, it's full of links to real news articles where he does where Trump does or says something similar to what we have him saying in the paper, in the April Fool's joke here. So it is terrifyingly plausible in a lot of ways.
Right. Other than that ridiculous statement that they're running mates, actually a lot of stuff in here is actually really educational about Trump not using email, not using computers. It's actually all kind of educational.
Yeah, he's kind of – Trump is – it's weird. Trump, he's like a 13-year-old, and I don't mean that in the sense of temperament, but in the way he uses the internet. He's on Twitter, but he's not on the desktop at all.
Well, if he's a 13-year-old, then he's better than the other day when Anderson Cooper accused him of being a 5-year-old. So that's
yes.
A step up.
Yes, that was very apt. Yes.
Oh, my God.
And then there's some other interesting ones. Under brief notes, there was – a kind of a hoax thing on Meta about virtual reality fundraising campaign for the foundation.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that was hilarious. Yeah, Joseph just emailed that to me this morning and said, I wrote this on Meta. Do you want to put this in the signpost? And we're like, all right, sure.
It's going to be interesting looking back on this in 10 years because virtual reality really is kind of the gee whiz technology of today. And looking back on this in the future, it'd be interesting to see if it looks as silly as it is now. Maybe it won't be silly in 10 years. Maybe this is exactly how fundraising will happen.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So this is a page on Meta which says, it is with great pleasure to announce that later this year, the Wikimedia Foundation will be launching its first virtual augmented reality fundraising campaign. 2016 will see virtual reality as the next technology to emerge from out of the trough of disillusionment and begin its slow climb up the slope of enlightenment.
Oh,
and this is a reference
that
to
that is a great turn of phrase.
Yeah, this is a reference to the very well-known hype cycle graph that Silicon Valley tends to adhere to. And there's actually a very good article in Wikipedia called Hype Cycle.
I had not heard of this. I thought it was some kind of weird Uncanny Valley reference or something.
Well, it kind of is. That trough of disillusionment is kind of like the sputtering out of a technology after the early adopters get it, and then it kind of comes back. So if you think of things like Tesla and things like that, there was kind of excitement in Tesla, and then, oh my God, Tesla stock is down. But then now Tesla's announcement of the new kind of budget electric car made the stock skyrocket. So this might be the slope of enlightenment for Tesla right now.
Yeah. Which is kind but of that is a very apt way to talk about virtual reality, because we've been hearing about virtual reality and how awesome it is for decades. And still not here yet. So we're still disappointed. We're still disillusioned. We don't have the cool bikes from Tron yet.
Right. It says, in a typical PC setting, a potential donor can look away from a banner or get distracted from the donation experience by watching television, a petulant small child, or even exercise. With virtual reality, we can have banners following people around the room, sitting in their peripherals
terrifying.
All the time.
Yeah, that's like Minority Report. That's right. How terrifying that is.
Right. And there's actually a picture of a guy with I believe this is a Samsung. I don't know what kind of headset this is, but it says donor acceptance testing. The guy with the virtual reality headset on. So nice touch. And then the other thing that was, it's interesting. Do you call this a hoax? It's not a hoax because it actually exists. There's a write-up here called.
Yeah, that is the brilliance of that humor is that it's all completely true.
Yeah, this one called Browse Wikipedia in Safety? Use Telnet, and this is written by Tim Starling, a longtime developer based in Australia for the Wikimedia Foundation. And it says, HTTPS was a good start, but to be really secure, it's not enough. Wikimedia is pleased to announce the launch of a Telnet gateway to Wikipedia. And if you click on this link, you actually go into a very old-fashioned terminal, or if you're on a Mac, it's the terminal program. If you're on a PC, it's probably your command prompt. And it actually interfaces with a server, telnet.wmflabs.org, and it's actually a fully functioning text interface to Wikipedia, which is a really cool kind of hack. So it's not really a hoax, it's a cool hack.
But it just seems like a hoax, because it's one of those things like it seems impossible to do, because Telnet really, at least to non-technical people, it really seems like an outdated technology, because some of us have not used, those of us who used Telnet haven't used them in years. Like the first email account I ever got, I had to Telnet into a program called Pine.
Oh, yeah.
Just email client for Unix, I think. And I had to Telnet into that to get to my email, and it was all text. And, well, I mean, it was still text, but you know what I mean.
Okay, hold up. So I was born in 1994. I don't know what any of the words you're saying mean.
Does the phrase command line mean anything to you? Kind of?
Kind of, because I think I would play some game hidden in the command line of Mac.
Right.
You ever play like Zork or any of those text games?
I played Zork, but as a teenager, like look at this retro thing.
It's basically like that. So instead of like open mailbox, you type open email. It's the same
principle. Are there monsters to fight?
Actually, didn't somebody make what crazy, like ASCII-based games, like adventure stuff back in those days on Unix?
Yep, that's right. They had that. So if you actually go to the Telnet, so Telnet is a program, all it does is from your, before we had graphical user interfaces like the Mac, you pretty much had to type in stuff for your computer to do. Like, show me what's in this directory. Like DIR on DOS or LS on Unix.
Oh my God, it has an ASCII puzzle glow.
Yeah, exactly. So if you go and tell that to it, someone, and I think that Tim Starling said User Dispenser made this, you made an ASCII art version of the puzzle sphere. So it's actually using just characters you can type on your keyboard, and you actually see the puzzle sphere using like exclamation points and parentheses and apostrophes and everything. And it actually looks like what you would see if you logged into an old BBS system, bulletin board system.
Oh, BBSs, yes. Oh.
So it's really...
Those are like the Wikipedia message boards of old.
Right. So when you log in, you'll see...
Full of weird cranks.
I don't even know what this user count means. When you log in, it says 132,538 users. I mean, does that mean it? It could be. I guess it could be number of active users this month. I'm not sure. But then you also see...
On Telnet?
No, probably not by Telnet, but through some other metric in Wikipedia. And then you scroll down, you see a community news section. But it's actually useful.
I bet there's probably going to be like a dozen or so diehards who use this as their main source of community interaction somehow.
You know what? I didn't realize this, Rob, but the first section right after it says welcome is in fact all the headlines from Signpost.
Oh, I like awesome. This already.
So in fact, the Wikipedia Weekly Podcast 120 that we did last week is actually in the first screen of this Telnet thing, which is kind of cool. So I think they're actually just scraping the text from the summaries for Signpost for community news. And then you can actually visit Wikisource, Wiktionary, Wikiquote, Commons if you want.
I wonder what... Can you edit from here? That would be... That's impressive.
Wait, you can edit via like this weird...
I don't know.
...text thing? It's even more of a throwback than Wikipedia itself is, which is like the biggest throwback
That's
on
true.
The internet
Wikipedia
right now.
It is a crazy throwback, isn't it?
Well, as we were talking about before we had, and Emily, believe it or not, you were born the year the web became public. 1994 was the year that the World Wide Web became like
the eternal September.
Yeah.
Well, I remember getting like. I'd never not had computers, and really, we had
computers
like,
too, you know.
No, but like...
I understand, yeah.
There was a computer, there was always a computer in my house, even when I was, you know, a baby, and I remember when we got our first computer that could access the internet, and I was a really little kid. I can't tell if I feel old or if the internet is young.
Well, it looks like you cannot edit, which I'm not really that sad about, but you actually can use a text-based web browser like Lynx.
Lynx. Oh, my God, Lynx. I used to use that.
Yeah, or some of those things to actually edit Wikipedia if you really wanted to. Yeah,
and honestly, like, I don't have a problem with that because if you're going to go in through this route, you know what you're doing. You have to be really dedicated to go this way and a little crazy, but really dedicated and knowledgeable about this stuff. So I don't see the harm in editing from Telnet.
I mean, okay, is editing from Telnet more or less super dedicated than editing on a phone?
Well, I don't mean dedicated in terms of purity or betterness. I just more like, you know, you're really into your thing, whatever your thing is.
Yeah.
Actually, I'd argue that editing on Lynx, a text-based browser, to me, is better than editing on a mobile where I'm trying to use my thumbs to click on the virtual keyboard. So I've actually edited via Lynx in the past when I'm kind of stuck without much of a bandwidth. So,
yeah, see, I have tiny hands, so it works fine
for
me.
Run for president.
Yeah. So really a cool hack. I mean, this is one of those cool April Fool's things where... You know, Google does this. A lot of the techie companies do this where it's actually a functioning thing. It's just like no sane person would ever do this, but it's really fun to showcase it.
Right. It's one of those things like watching it is cool. Like one of those like monster trucks going over cars. But do you want to do that yourself? Well, maybe you do. I don't know. But, you know, if you just watch something crazy, but you never actually want to participate in it in your own life.
It's the same type of thing that makes you appreciate like a Rube Goldberg machine. It's like there's much better ways to do this.
Oh, that's an excellent analogy. That's exactly what this is.
Yeah. So anyway,
it's like that guy who made that like life-sized mousetrap game.
Right, right. All right, so April Fool's jokes, but let's talk a little bit about the front page. So something that that some people might not notice every year is that the front page of English Wikipedia, at least, is in fact full of content that's not typical of a given day of the 364 other days of the year. What do we find on the front page today? We find that the featured article is a guy named Gregor McGregor.
That's like
Bodie McBoatface. Yeah, Bodie McBoatface. This is actually, wow, I didn't think about that. This is actually the original Bodie McBoatface.
Yes, I think that's the joke.
So every kind of article you'll find on the front page that's not either in the news or something that is driven by another editorial thread is in fact kind of handpicked to be quirky, weird, almost unbelievable by design. So you'll see in the Did You Know that U.S. officials grabbed a Tyrannosaurus that entered the country illegally, or that Taco Cabana paid $22 million for 2 pesos. And so it's just really weird stuff, but weirder than you normally would see on the front page.
Yeah, Did You Know does a really good job. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people have a lot of complaints about how they do things, but this is one area where they do things really well. They save these throughout the year in a special section. So some of these articles might have been written like 9-6 months ago, mm-hmm. and they've been saving them just for April 1st.
Right. And then even the featured picture is a painting of a guy in the middle of yawning from 1783, which is really unusual. So I guess it's just kind of like
you're familiar with this, right? This is a famous painting mm-hmm. on the internet.
Oh, I didn't know it was famous on the internet. I've seen it before.
Yeah. Oh, do you not know about the meme?
No.
Well, let me send you a picture of this, but basically this is not the picture that's used in a meme, but this is he's a French self-portraitist. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, he painted other things too, but he's famous for self-portraits in unusual poses
yeah.
for the day.
Oh my God.
One of them, he's the same guy that wrote that painted that pose of that guy with the cane and the dandy outfit pointing at the camera,
yeah.
pointing at the camera, but pointing at the viewer. And then people a couple years ago started putting memes on him. And it was like the first one, I think it said like disregard. Oh, what did it say?
Disregard females acquire currency.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's the meme. Yeah. And so they would just plaster all kinds of crazy things on this guy's self-portraits. And it was very I love that whole like old culture, new culture mashup sort of thing.
It's bizarre. Yeah. I've been looking at the picture. It's bizarre to think this dates back to 1793. It looks like some guy going like, hey, you know, we want you. It's really.
Yeah. But look at the main picture in the painter's article. And that's the one that they've been modifying primarily.
Right. And then there's another one of him like putting his finger over his mouth, like, shh, you know, trying to say shush.
It's amazing because we have this certain view of the past. Mm-hmm. Like it's frozen in time and in attitude, and it seems kind of stuffy. And then when we look back at someone who feels very contemporary, it's very jarring.
Right.
It jars us out of our stereotypes.
So this is the French painter Joseph de Creux, 1735 to 1802, in the middle of a large yawn.
So yeah, it's very yeah, and so the past seems approachable. It seems filled with real people all of a sudden, instead of like distant, you know, people in frilly dresses and stiff poses.
Well, we were reminiscing previously before we went on air about the fact that this was not always the case for the front page of English Wikipedia. I mean, there was I don't want to call it a knockdown fight, but there's a very strong debate about what English Wikipedia should do on April Fools. I remember going all the way back to 2003, 2004. And there was a significant faction of folks who wanted to treat the front page as fair game for absolute falsehoods and complete hoaxes on the front page that had no footing in factual content in Wikipedia. And that was a big debate at the time. And I can't even remember when the corner turned and we kind of converged on the model that we have now, which I think is a pretty good one. But it wasn't always the case that there was consensus that the front page should all be factual and point to only real Wikipedia articles.
Well, the internet was a lot more freewheeling
right.
a few years ago. So
and Wikipedia was not nearly as popular back in 2003.
Yeah, so it seemed a lot more harmless to be able to do those sorts of things.
Makes sense. And Wikipedia didn't have a reputation to protect the way that we do now.
Yeah.
And now any attempt at humor is seen as endangering the encyclopedia. And granted, most of the attempts we see at humor on April Fool's Day are not funny at all. like, oh yay, someone nominated Jimbo for deletion for the 80,000th time. Like,
yeah, that, I mean, that's an April Fool's Day tradition, isn't it? Is just eye rolling at other people's April Fool's
it is.
Jokes.
It is, which is in and of itself an enjoyable tradition, I guess. Being a curmudgeon.
It's like fruitcake at Christmas. You know, it's like, oh, this again.
yeah, exactly.
Why I think the one that's done every year also is nominating the April Fool's Day article for deletion, which I think is the fourth.
Oh, did that happen again?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and then it just and then the deletion's already been the AFD's already been deleted.
From my count, it was nominated
as a blatant hoax. Yeah, thanks for that. We didn't realize.
It was nominated twice today for deletion, but both were turned back pretty quickly.
That's good.
With the note of keep the jokes out of mainspace, please. But I think that does.
But is the that? But that's not mainspace.
That's true.
Well, it puts a tag on a mainspace article.
Okay, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people think there is no space in Wikipedia for humor. It seems like sometimes.
Yeah, our favorite example was the list of cetaceans, and cetaceans mean like dolphins and what I guess beluga whales are cetaceans as well in terms of.
Whales, dolphins, and porpoises.
Yes. And, not orcas.
You know, there was this delicious joke of putting cetacean needed where there was no information for this dolphin, which is awesome. Except someone
it's
went in
so
there
funny.
And deleted them all, saying, that's not right. We should put citation needed, not cetacean. Actually, in fact, they just.
Yeah, and people are all. They removed it based on what. On the worry that. Readers are not going to understand it, or it's not appropriate for readers. And whenever I tell that story to readers, they think it's funny.
Yeah,
they get the joke. They're in on it. It's not like we're distracting from this mythical reader who doesn't get it. They love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also an appropriately highbrow joke. It's yes. Not like butts, which is like 99% of the joking we see on Wikipedia, yeah. You know?
And another thing, like the front page jokes, it's factually accurate because we did need pictures of those cetaceans.
We did need pictures of the cetaceans. That will remain forever my favorite, like, Wikipedia joke.
Oh, it looks like somebody slipped one in. I guess after they hear this podcast.
It wasn't me, but
Atlantic humpback dolphin. It is still there. Cetacean needed. Awesome. For the picture.
Yeah, I just like...
And
I,
now
I,
it'll be gone.
I was at the Florida Library Association. I was doing a presentation on, introducing Wikipedia to librarians and how to use it. And I told them about the cetacean thing, and they all thought it was funny. Like, the only people who don't think it's funny are Wikipedians.
Well, hope to keep it under wraps.
I don't understand this whole attitude. I think that, I don't know, my theory is that maybe people are overly worried about legitimacy, that people are worried about, you know, people dismissing Wikipedia, about Wikipedia not being taken seriously in schools, you know, by readers, by teachers, by the academic establishment. But Wikipedia is the establishment now. We're the seventh biggest website in the world. We're the most used information source on the planet. And in human history, so we're there. We're established, and a couple jokes here and there are not gonna cause us to lose our legitimacy.
So I think what's happening here, it's like rebellious teenager growing up and having kids, or like a garage punk band, you know, that started out as teenagers rebelling against the establishment, like growing up and having adult lives beyond that, and it's like you can't do that. You're the establishment now, you know?
Oh, my God. That is a brilliant analogy. That's a lot of what happened. These are experienced Wikipedians, and they thought it was fun and games at first, but now it's their serious job to be Wikipedia editor. And
yeah.
It's an actual job.
Yeah.
To use an analogy.
Yeah, for a lot of us, like for all of us talking in this conversation, it is our job in one way or another, Wikipedia.
This is probably going to date me and go way past Emily, but I don't know if you'll get it, Rob, but it's kind of like we've gone from Jefferson Airplane to become Jefferson Starship. We have basically gone from edgy...
Can we go back the other direction, please?
We've gone from, like, I wouldn't say edgy even. It's, like, kind of progressive and cutting edge too really bland and mainstream. And yeah,
if you become just Starship, then I quit.
And just Starship, not even Jefferson Starship, just Starship. Like a lame 80s cover band. That's basically what we've become.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to break into a song. Like, I'm just going to start singing, "We Built This Website." And then we'll just have to start recording the podcast.
Yeah, we built this PDA. Oh, God. All right, so that enough music analogies. I'm not even sure how apt that is, but it just reminded me of.
No, it's even if it's not apt, it's hilarious.
That's all that matters.
And that's the important thing.
All right, so yes, so at least we converge on a model for the front page of Wikipedia now that we're not fighting over what that should be anymore,
yes.
Which is good. So let's get on to the next topic, which we want to talk about, which is the monthly metrics meeting, which is actually not just a metrics meeting, but an activities meeting. And this is the first one that happened since Catherine Marr took over as interim. So in fact, this is actually the day after Lila's last day as ED. Well, we don't have to go too deep in the metrics meeting other than to mention some of the things that they talked about, because people can go to the YouTube video and watch it. And I encourage people who are not used to watching it to actually watch it. It's actually a great way to keep in touch with the faces and people, folks at the foundation. And they covered things like the fact that they're in the middle of the strategic planning process, right? So people can still give feedback, I think, on the wiki, on the strategic plan. And then they also talked about a study that was done in Mexico with 15 editors that they had down there with some interesting results, even though it was a very small sample size. So, Rob, you had
I wanted to talk about that because the small sample size is actually it's a good thing, because they did one of the things they did a telephone survey of Ghana and Mexico, and they just asked some broad questions about awareness, and there's kind of a surprisingly low level of awareness of Wikipedia. Like, I think Ghana was like at 25% and Mexico was at 50%, and there's only so much you can glean from a larger. I would contend that smaller is better, because you can engage with the people that you're talking to. Mm-hmm. You can find out, instead of just asking them questions that you already know what the questions are, when you engage with people at that level, you can find out what the questions you should be asking are. And that's very important, I think, when mm-hmm. we're trying to engage the global south from our Western, you know, or our global north perspective, from our perspective where we all have desktops and we're technically literate, and then we're engaging with people speak a different language, they're using mobile, that they may or may not know about Wikipedia. And so we want to find out how they went down there and they talked to them, they were in their homes, they looked at exactly how they were editing Wikipedia, what they thought about Wikipedia, and when you engage people at that level, you find out, you just let it, you know, let the questions go where they need to go, instead of asking like preset questions. And maybe you miss important things that you need to know about that you don't already know. So I think it's fantastic that the Wikipedia Foundation is doing stuff like that, is trying to engage like this at this level, because that's the future. That's, you know, there's a lot of websites that did things the way they wanted to do things, and now they're out of business, and we don't hear about Dig or whatever anymore.
And that's still a thing?
Yeah, exactly. And so Wikipedia is trying to find out how people are doing things, instead of trying to do the other way, is trying to make people interested in what they're doing. So, you know, try to reach them on their level. So that's I thought it was very fascinating. I realized that if you only talk to 15 people, there's only so much you can learn. It is a limited sample size, but it gives you the opportunity to delve deeper into those issues.
Right. Did they frame it as ethnographic research? Because it seems a lot more like ethnographic research than a survey per se.
I don't think they used it that phrase. They may have, or not, but it is a very good comparison. What I thought of was, like, when we in the library we do this in the library, we have broad surveys, and we also have like smaller, like it's like a focus group,
right?
Basically, in politics or in entertainment or whatever, it's a focus group. That's exactly what they did.
Yeah, and it's stuff like this that I want to highlight to the community, especially on you know, like mailing list discussions where, you know, the foundation has consistently said, you know, we want to be advocate for the reader. We want to try to do things. And then the typical response from our community of editors, like we have the readers in mind when we make our decisions about editing and everything. And my response is, you really don't. Like, you really don't know how to do this kind of work to understand what the average person experiences when they either use Wikipedia or see the array of tabs at the top and how glazed over they get and not really knowing what goes on.
Right? Yeah. Well, they're also not readers. Like, right. Okay, all of us who edit are readers, but not in the same way that the average person on the planet is a reader. Mm-hmm. Like, if, and unless your mom's a Wikipedia editor, you'll get something more reasonable.
Right. We missed about 5 seconds of what you said there, but I think the mom part came through and it's
call your mom. She's an average reader. You're not.
Yes, exactly. Like, the more work I do talking to people, whether it's library patrons or other librarians, about using Wikipedia, the more I realize Wikipedia is complicated. It seems simple to us because we're experienced with it, we're comfortable with it, and we're comfortable with it. And that's one of the reasons why we're longtime editors, is because it works for us, but it might not work for other people, and we need to find out why.
Yeah, definitely.
Instead of basing our expectations on our own personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think
that's very true.
Each of us is on the front lines of either training or, Rob, you know, you work on a reference desk, so we see all kinds of, we see a lot more, I don't want to say average people, we see a lot more folks who can give us an impression of what newbies feel when they see Wikipedia. And I think we have a pretty good understanding of a lot of the mental models that people have Wikipedia. And that's actually one of the things that they reported in this metrics meeting. There's a slide that said mental model of how Wikipedia articles are written. And here it said 7 out of the 15 participants think experts write all Wikipedia articles. That's kind of interesting.
Ah!
Yeah. You know, that's – now, I wanted to – I'm glad you brought that up. I'm really glad, because when I saw that, I thought, you know, I don't think that that should be a realization just for Mexico or for the Global South, because a lot of people think that in the Global North.
Oh, absolutely.
I just heard an anecdote from an editor, a longtime editor, who spent some time with her family. And she's had the same experience. Like, all her family thought that experts were writing articles.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could view that as a compliment to Wikipedia, that they think it's
that's
that
true. Good. Yes. Yes. The silver lining.
Well, and with medicine, 85% of us in the medicine project have medical degrees or are in medical school or have medical experience of some kind.
Oh, absolutely. Like, experts are writing Wikipedia, but I don't know. You know, we want everyone to write Wikipedia too, you know, and so it's a double-edged sword. It's like, on the one hand, we want to promote the idea that experts are writing Wikipedia. We want people to feel comfortable using Wikipedia as a resource, mm-hmm. and to feel that they can rely on the information within. On the other hand, we want them to come there and write too. And if we get pushed too much of this expert thing, then maybe a lot of people will feel they can't contribute to Wikipedia because they feel like they're not experts.
And I feel like that's the more common experience now, is like, oh, I can just edit. You don't have to do anything. And I was, you know, no, it's open to everybody unless you've done something bad. And people are just flabbergasted.
Right. I'd like to think that maybe the right distinction is to say 7 of the 15 participants think that expert standards and practices are used on Wikipedia articles, mm-hmm. or maybe higher than that. But the focus should be on the values and the methods rather than exactly who that person is as an expert. Right. And then the other thing that was there was 3 out of 15 participants think there is a process to verify information before it is added to a Wikipedia article.
Yeah, that's
worrying.
That's troubling, yeah.
Well, I mean, each individual editor has their own process. Some are more rigorous than others.
Yeah,
My process involves a lot of research. Not everyone does.
I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off.
No, it's fine. I'm just thinking about how I've definitely made edits that have been incorrect in the past, and like in the process of you know, going through all of my sources, I realized that something I'd added earlier is outdated or something, and go back and fix it.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how much we all miss.
Yeah. But I was just going to say, like, I made the point, I was just kind of describing the process. And I did for those of you listening, I did a presentation about Wikipedia at the Florida Library Association conference, talking to other professional librarians, and I was describing, you know, trying to get them to use Wikipedia and showing them what they need to do to get on Wikipedia. I basically described the process as, you know, once you get past the gauntlet of the new page editors and new page patrollers, maybe no one will ever touch that article or look at that article or verify the article for many years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'm really uncomfortable with the idea of people thinking that these things are vetted or expecting Wikipedia and Wikipedia editors to be the vetters when they're not doing that.
There's just too much for a community this small to manage.
Right. And it just kind of feeds into the attitude of Wikipedia is something someone else does. And we really, you know, Wikipedia fix it. Wikipedia will verify it. And we need to get rid of that attitude. Otherwise, we're never going to recruit any editors.
That's a good point.
The interesting takeaway is take a look at that Mexico study, some interesting insights there, and we're hoping that more of these types of studies are done, not just in, as you said, the Global South, but in lots of different communities. It'd be great to find out more about this.
But yeah, I'm glad, like, there's a lot of complaints about, you know, how the foundation does this or the foundation does that, but it's great to see them doing this kind of work and really looking, playing the long game here is what they're doing.
Yeah, this is stuff the community could never...
Glad to see that.
Yeah, I mean, this is what it's almost like. Even if you believe in the small government model of the Wikimedia Foundation, this is something that you need small government to do. Like, you cannot do this from the community. You need someone to take up this task.
And even if you don't think of it, you know, as governance, it's just somebody is doing this, whether it's the people in charge or an independent foundation or someone. But it's good to see that somebody's doing this.
Right.
Because it's not one of those things that's going to spontaneously erupt from the internet like Wikipedia did.
All right,
parthenogenesis by internet?
Internogenesis?
Yeah. Cytogenesis?
So our next story is Emily. You are our next story.
So I'm a story.
If you haven't...
And now I am the only one in this conversation who doesn't have a Wikipedia article because Emily is now famous.
I would not use the word famous.
Internet famous.
And having a Wikipedia article about yourself is a whole nother level of stress, annoyance.
I mean, my strategy has just been ignore the thing.
It's probably for the best.
And don't let... There was an AFD, and I guess it survived. Like, I've been ignoring it very, very hard.
Don't look. Yeah, that's the best advice you have for it, Wikipedia articles, which is ironic because you're looking at every other article but except your own. So,
there's plenty of other articles that I ignore very intentionally.
So for the folks living in a cave, there was a very prominent blog post on the Wikimedia Foundation blog about Emily. What was it? I guess it was both that and Signpost, you know, showing that you were undertaking this whole idea of every time getting a annoying or trollish or sexist harassing email, you took that as a motivation to start a new article in Wikipedia. And this said it resonated in the popular media.
Yeah, I guess people think this is interesting, and I'm glad that people find it interesting, not because it brings attention to me. That makes me uncomfortable. But because it brings attention to women scientists and the systemic bias projects and all the other cool stuff that we're doing, which I think people should know about.
Yeah, and you've been written up in places like BBC and all kinds of places, and you've also had radio interviews and...
Yeah, I had one earlier today.
Weeks after this first started happening.
Yeah, I have like 4 things scheduled on Monday. It's just very bizarre.
And why do you think
this resonates?
I mean, do you think it's that this happens so much and so often that no one's really found a way to deal with it, but this is a pretty novel way?
I guess it's a novel way of dealing with it. I'm glad to provide another solution for people who are being harassed online. because you really do spin your wheels when people are harassing you, and it's nice to find some traction.
It's I think the story, I think your story resonates on two levels. I think it's very empowering, both in the sense of dealing with harassment and empowering in terms of knowledge creation. And you're telling people that they can tackle both of these things at once.
That's
and they
true.
Can take control, they can take control of both of these and positive force in both of these ways.
Yeah, and I think I'm trying to find a way to phrase this right. Trolling will still hurt. I don't mean to imply in any way with what I'm doing that it's not still frustrating and upsetting and emotionally draining to have this happen to you, because it absolutely is. And I know, Rob, you're on ARBCOM, so you probably get at least a little bit of the, like, crazy pants. Actually, I know for a fact you get some crazy pants harassment because I've seen some of the same stuff.
Right, and I've been harassed over the 10 years that I've been on Wikipedia, but honestly, it's nothing compared to...
I think yours just isn't sexual in nature.
Right, and that's huge. That's a huge thing.
That's true. And it's very distressing.
I mean, if I got sexually harassed, it would creep me out.
It's very creepy.
It's just a whole. It's fundamentally a different thing. Somebody called me a Nazi. Somebody called me this. Like, you know, that sucks. But it's nothing like the kinds of things that are directed at women, and they're so bad. I don't even want to talk about them on this podcast. I don't want to say the words to describe.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, what I've been mostly saying is inappropriate sexual overtures and or fantasies is a way to describe the stuff that I get. And I don't even have it as bad as many other women that I know, honestly. Like, I know guerrilla warfare gets way worse than I do. And we're in similar situations, you know, in life. But I think the difference is that, like I can call my mom, and she'll be like, oh, how's Wikipedia going? And I can be like, oh, someone thinks I'm, you know, a Nazi, Jew, Stalin, Illuminati, ha, ha, ha. And she'll think that's funny. Whereas somebody sent me an email saying they're going to blankety blank me and my entire family. That's not funny. Godwin's law is funny. This stuff is not.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're providing other folks a window into Wikipedia's world and finding a way to turn... not really swords into plowshares, but turn trolls. Well, maybe the project should be called Troll 2 Edits or something like that. But we need a hashtag to capture this.
With the Z?
Z trolls, yeah. Trolls 2 Edits.
Yes. But yeah, but I think we need to hear these stories. And we need to hear the negative ones too, but your story is so popular because it's a positive story about this.
Well, yeah, and it's also, I'm doing something that's fundamentally feminist, from an act of misogyny and anti-feminism, which I think that is attractive to people too. I guess it gives me a wider platform to talk about women scientists, and anybody who knows me, you two included, know that I will get up on my soapbox about women scientists any chance I'm given, any time, any day.
Well, you're doing a badass job, and I use the word badass intentionally.
Yes.
Intentionally, so...
Yes, you're an inspiration to a lot of people. Aww. And a lot of and us, I think.
Oh
as
my
well.
God.
Yeah. I'm going to stop now.
Yeah. Please stop. I'm turning purple.
Well, I'm sure the next time we talk on the podcast there will still be media being done on the story, because it's been a month almost and...
Oh, yeah, this is fantastic. Yes. And I think that we, you know, I hope that you can channel this into more positive things and keep using this platform to spread positive messages.
Yeah.
Well, watch the space. I'm doing some writing in non-Wikipedia areas about women scientists that I'm hoping will gain some traction. And it has already spawned a bunch of Wikipedia articles because I've been in the middle of researching other things and been like, oh, crap, I got to write that too. So watch this space. There'll be more.
Well, let's talk about a few other stories. We won't really go in depth with them. In fact, we might even have a Wikipedia Weekly episode about some of these at length. So one of the stories that people might have seen in the last few weeks is a story about Wikipedia Zero in Angola, of all places. So we're planning to have an interview with folks in the Wikimedia Foundation dealing with this issue of people who have been using Wikipedia Zero and Facebook Zero. So these are both programs that telecom operators in mostly global South countries have agreed to provide free, you know, mobile access to Wikipedia and to Facebook, which seems like it's a good thing, right? They don't have to pay for data usage to access Wikipedia and to Facebook, except for the weird thing that some very clever folks have found a way to sock away movies and other pirated content on Commons and other parts of Wikipedia, and then use Facebook to tell people about that. So this has become a really bad problem on Portuguese Wikipedia, because Angola, you know, Portuguese is a popular language there. So we're trying to get an extended interview with the folks at the Wikimedia Foundation who are dealing with this problem of people gaming the Wikipedia Zero program to sock away illegal content or copyright violations in the Wikimedia servers. What do you think about this story?
Yeah, I just found this whole thing fascinating. There's so many, it's the intersection of so many ethical issues. Like I told you the other day, I actually talked to an ethicist about this. I'm really, it's amazing. There's so much, it's not just the piracy is actually maybe the least interesting thing about this. The whole issue about net neutrality, there's
colonialism.
Yes, colonialism. Thank you. That's the word I was reaching for there.
But I can see it on your face.
Yeah, and all these things are going on. It's like, how do we engage with the global South? Like, what is the appropriate way? And, you know, if we give them this tool and they don't use it in the way that we want them to, who's right and who's wrong? So I'm really looking forward to that discussion.
I look forward to listening to it.
Yeah, we hope we get the folks next week. But I think complicating this also is that Angola actually has laws on copyright that are actually not the same as ours. So in fact, some of the stuff they may be doing isn't exactly illegal in Angola. Is that right? I'm trying to figure this whole thing out.
That's something we should look into for next week. Yeah, that's a very good point.
That's the scuttlebutt, yeah, is that Angola has particularly liberal copyright laws. Mm-hmm. So what they're doing may not actually be illegal in their jurisdiction.
All right. So
I do not envy the folks at the foundation for having to navigate this.
Right. I think the one-line summary from the foundation folks is it's complicated. There is no easy way out of this.
Right. Because whatever they do, it's a downside. Like, the best choice is still, like, an ethical downside.
Right.
In some respects.
And it seems like, I think their official statement is the solution of blocking editing from anonymous IPs is off the table. That's not something they're going to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, how do you have Wikipedia Zero exist at all if you're just going to block the IP range of everyone in Angola?
So creative
solutions. That's a terrible idea.
Yeah, creative solutions might be needed. All right, our next story is IEG grants. So these are some kind of deadline stories, but IEG individual engagement grants are open until April 12th. So these are for up to $30,000 for ideas that help engage new editors and participants. Commons Picture of the Year voting goes until April 10th. So it's a little bit later than people would expect, but the Pictures of the Year for 2015, so photos and media taken in 2015 are now up for voting. So this is the round one voting for Commons.
And we were looking at that earlier, and there's a lot of pictures, but they're helpfully categorized.
Ooh.
So if you want to just look at pictures of water, there's a category for you. Or, let's see, infrastructure. That's a fun one. If you're like bridges and railroads, that's where you
let's
need to go.
Let's not talk about I love bridges.
There's an entire category just for frescoes, which is quite large.
Really?
79 images in that. So
I like that. That's cool.
Oh, wow. Some of these are gorgeous.
So go vote.
Yeah, I'm going to vote in this category for
this
sure.
This seems to be better organized than I remember in years past. This is pretty darn good.
Oh, yeah, there's more subcategories, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like fresco ceilings and stained glass is 79 on its own. That's distinct from interiors of religious buildings. So until April 10th, you can vote on those things. Something that's happening right now is a Wikimedia hackathon in Jerusalem. This is something, I don't know if it's every year. I think it is every year, but you've got a bunch of Wikimedia hackers over there in Jerusalem in a compound that was a former leper colony.
Now, is that real or is that like an April Fool's thing?
No, it's real. There's actually an article about that leprechaun.
There's actually people there.
Like the leprechaun is
that I don't know.
Okay. See, the hackathon I thought was real. It's the leper colony part that I was questioning.
But they've turned it into kind of a cool media art space. So that's where they're holding it. All right. So the last thing is, what's making you happy this week in Wikipedia? So I'll go first, since you folks might have to take a few seconds to think of what is making you happy. But I posted this in the Wikipedia Weekly group. I had a recent edit-a-thon in D.C. where we were at the Smithsonian Archives, and I showed my students how to correctly alter Commons uploads, because the generic Commons upload wizard actually isn't great. It just basically says, fill in the description. Where actually, if you know what you're doing, you can actually do a lot more with templates to jack into Wikidata. So there is actually a really good artwork template. So open squiggle brace artwork actually has a very elaborate template where you can say, you know, artist and location, like what museum it's in. And if you put in the right incantations for the artist and the institution, like you hit it right on the dot, because it's not exactly the most user-friendly thing, but if it's at Smithsonian American Art Museum or a Smithsonian Institution Archives, you get this wonderful thing when you save your template where it points to the Wikidata item for the institution and the artist, and you get all kinds of cool magical things that can happen because it's now jacked into Wikidata. So that was kind of neat to show the students there, yeah. And I didn't even know that much about this, and it was great that these edit-a-thons can even show me, you know, new things that I didn't know about, because Commons is something that I kind of dabble in, but I don't really know all the particulars. So Jim Hayes and Effie Capsalis from the Smithsonian, we worked on that and got our students to maybe alter about 30 to 40 pictures of one artist to point to Wikidata. So that's kind of a cool thing that we did. What's making you happy, Emily?
So what's making me happy is the new Wiki Project Women in Red extravaganza that's happening. So we are having month-long edit-a-thons combined with the Wiki Ed Foundation Year of Science project that is ongoing right now. So we're tweeting about it at Wiki Women in Red on Twitter, by which I mean I'm not tweeting about it. Whoever runs the account is tweeting about it. But I'm very excited to see the writing about women scientists of different disciplines. And we're also having our month-long Women Writers Edit-a-thon. Mm. Ah, so much women. It's great. I'm really excited. we have the Women in Science, Welsh Women, and Women Writers all happening in April. Get excited. Join us on the Women in Red homepage. There's a place to sign up for all these events.
Nice. Did you know only 16% of English Wikipedia's biographies are about women? Not impressed? Join us. That's the tagline for women.
Oh, that's appalling.
Yeah. That's our poll. And you got to credit Rosie for that. For any of you who don't know, Rosie Stepp is basically Superwoman. She's so great. She coordinates Women in Red, and she does an amazing job while writing a bajillion articles herself. She's just incredible.
Yes, it helps out with the signpost, too, which has made our lives much, much easier.
So, Rob, what's making you happy this week?
Well, I thought I would talk about Wikipedia space, since it's still in my house. Wikipedia space is actually your pet project. It's a series of banners, really beautifully designed, really tall, portable banners that people can look at events like edit-a-thons or conventions. They're designed a portable set to go on the road because they've only been seen before at the National Archives and events in D.C., so I was able to display them at the Florida Library Association and take them on the road, hoping to send them to conventions around the country where we can reach target audiences like academics or people who might be interested in Wikipedia and need to learn more about it. And we set these up in common areas so they can learn about it on their own time. at their own pace instead of like sitting through a presentation or trying to edit. It's like gauge them, you know, while they're milling about, they can read about it at their own pace. So these really, they're really, like I said, they're really well designed. They're portable. They're relatively easy to set up. And so they were at the Florida Library Association convention in February. They're going to be in an edit-a-thon next week at the University of South Florida. And I'm not sure where they're going after that. Probably back to my house for a little bit until there's a place for them to be shown.
The intention is that we could have more of a presence at conferences and gatherings with these as kind of a standard thing that we can show up with. So,
yeah, I'm really excited.
Like a standard outreach.
Yes, I'm really excited about the possibility of engaging, like particularly like certain groups of academics. Like I believe maybe the American Chemistry Society is on the list in the future, I'm hoping, because I know they've done Wikipedia stuff before.
Yeah, we're now like averaging
Wikipedia DC is working with them, yeah.
Yeah, we have like 5 to 7, sometimes 10 edit-a-thons a month here in DC, so they definitely could use a workout.
You know, they're just in my house right now, and I'm the only one looking at them, so.
They're not set up in your house, so you can walk by them?
No, I wish I had the room. I was very tempted. I might, before I was in the back, I might set them up and take some selfies or something ridiculous.
All right.
But maybe, you know, maybe take them to the park, have a nice lunch.
God.
All right, so that's it for this week on Wikipedia Weekly, and happy April Fool's Day. Enjoy the front page of Wikipedia as long as it lasts. If you want a snapshot of it, I saved a PDF version of the front page.
Yeah, we hope you all enjoyed April Fool's Day and you had a lot of laughs, or at least you survived the experience.
And we just want to remind folks that between episodes, we also have the very active Wikipedia Weekly Facebook group. There's also the signpost page that hosts the Wikipedia Weekly podcast. And there's also the wikipediaweekly.org site that has an RSS feed if you subscribe to podcasts from your mobile device or your music player. And feel free to send us feedback at the Facebook page or individually. All right. Thanks, Emily. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Take care.
Bye.